So you go down this cliff, go left down the cliff, yeah. Left, and then just tumble for a while, and then you should be there.
It's society. They work for each other, they pay each other, they buy houses, they get married, make children.
That just sounds like slavery with extra steps.
I don't know if you've noticed, but our two-party system is a bowl of shit looking in the mirror at itself.
I can't wait for the episode of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire where all the contestants team up and they overpower the host and they share the money.
The message of Occupy Wall Street is I would prefer not to play the existing game.
We are a socialist party and there are social solutions to the problems.
Communal lifestyles, I don't know about that.
No one can tell me what to do.
Wow, you're a real anarchist.
And now we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
No words for you puppets of the West. Communism forever.
God, those communists are amazing.
Hello, welcome to the Three Left Show. Happy Saturday, everybody. I'm your host, Dan Platt. I'm back with Sage.
Yo, yo.
In the studio. This is your source for radical analysis, point of view, and politics right from the radical left here in Albany, New York at the community radio station WCAA-FM here in Albany, New York. Now, I wanted to start the show. I do have a topic to jump into, kind of a what are we watching, what are we reading. And I just saw a pretty cool vid by a YouTube video by a YouTuber named H Bomber Guy. And he's kind of part of a pantheon of a new leftist YouTube, lefty tube. And he just did, and he does kooky videos on gaming topics sometimes. It's really, he has all creative from freedom because it's just him and one other person helping him. And so he did one on speedrunning. I'm not talking about parkour. This is where you play a video game, start to finish, as fast as possible. So you use glitches, you use hacks, maybe all these different ways, or just none of those things, and it's just a matter of playing a game as fast as possible. And he used it as a vehicle to talk about, briefly at the very least, about positive competition. Now, this is a community of speedrunners that are positive. It's a positive competitive environment, as opposed to the negative competition, which is what we're usually talking about when people talk about competition being good. Now, usually they're referring to the positive competition, and what really makes it, and he has an observation from watching and learning about the speedrunning community and even participating in a small way, and that there are many categories of success, many different categories of speedrunning. So like there's an any percent completion. There's a full percent completion, playing a game, collecting everything, or not collecting everything, finishing the game without using any glitches, or using all these glitches, or all glitches, or just not using this specific glitch. So there's many different categories, and it's conscious, everyone's conscious about building off of each other. Oh, I found this cool trick that shaves off a full half hour off the game time. And it's about outdoing each other, but not actually like, I need to get a better time than this guy. I just want to have the best time. And I'm also more trying to outdo myself and get past my best time, on my own. And any game can be pretty much speed run. Some games are more built for it than others. And those are the really popular ones. Usually shooters aren't included. Although sometimes they are, like the old school ones, GoldenEye, Perfect Dark. I watched a speedrun of Perfect Dark, and there are only minor glitches used where, like, say you break the game and you go through a wall, so you're basically skipping around the map or something like that. Other times, it really is just being able to play the game the best way possible, and that's why there's multiple categories of success. So in our own society, in our own lives, we need to have as many categories of success as possible, many different ways of succeeding. Usually by our economic standard of like, why does a business succeed or fail? It's usually, are they maximizing profit? How well are they able to exploit resources or people? Then, and so on and so on. It's basically you need to make profit, and thus, we have a store closing, a Rite Aid, because they either weren't successful by the metric of capitalism. Or it is that Walgreens, the competitor of Rite Aid, which recently bought Rite Aid, is now cutting down their competition. as they're telling everyone in one poorer neighborhood that they should shop at the Walgreens that's more in the center of town, in a different neighborhood.
Oh, neat. I didn't know about Walgreens buying up Rite Aid. That's...
Somebody was mentioning that in the conversation, as community leaders and elected officials have all signed on a letter asking Rite Aid not to close this one store. And my usual retort is, capital does not care about your protests. If the store is not making as much money as the company wants it to, they'll close it. And the real response is, considering that all the elected officials, including the mayor, is about keeping the store open because it's so safe and popular to rally around community leaders, that it's the only full-service pharmacy in that neighborhood. There are bodegas that sell, you know, over-the-counter stuff, but it's not a full pharmacy that can sell illegal drugs, meaning drugs you need permission to get from a doctor to obtain. So what have you been into, Sage?
Yeah, I've been into reading a lot of Bertrand Russell lately, a classic philosopher who was a sassy English guy and broke things down in some of the most rigorous logic possible. And I recently finished his essay, Common Sense in Nuclear Warfare. It was written in the 50s, but it's interesting seeing how it does and doesn't map onto now. And I think my favorite excerpt from it was where he says that nuclear weapons are, kind of like rabid dogs. If I have a bunch of rabid dogs and the Russians have a bunch of rabid dogs, we wouldn't go saying, hey, let's, keep a bunch of these rabid dogs so we can unleash them on the other guy. They're rabid dogs. They're dangerous. You put them down. That's just how it is. You don't want something that dangerous running around biting everybody just because, oh, maybe I can bite the bad guy. No, you just get rid of them. You're much safer that way.
That reminds me of Corporate Lawyers and the new book by David Graeber, Bullcrap Jobs, censoring for the radio.
Oh, yeah, Bullcrap Jobs.
And basically it's a whole category of jobs, whole careers, where they exist because one company has said role of a lawyer to sue other companies, and thus you need a lawyer to defend yourself from others. So it's like, why do you have all these corporate lawyers on your payroll? And they'll say, well, I have to have them on my payroll because of the other guy who has, and why?
Yeah,
because
they're
direct negative competitors. You can win if you make the other guy lose. To have positive competition only, we need to strip that out of the economy.
Yeah, it
through
goes right back to game theory.
Some legislative, it needs to be structural, obviously. I don't think it's something you can pass a law and say, we're banning negative competition between firms. No more suing each other. And because that would cause so many freedom problems, I guess. Freedom to sue, the freedom to use, it's said that, this is the self-regulation of using the courts, which, of course, are a state apparatus. Thus, it's kind of why you need the state to have capitalism. So saying you can have less government or, whatever, or just by minimum, just the courts and thus the police to enforce it, so that one firm can dominate others. This week's show, we're going to cover the first hour, split in half, is we're going to cover multiple sources covering the same kind of story, which is that there's the preliminary UN paper on development, global development, and they usually have a biological committee who basically researches the effects of climate change and how is it affecting people and in overall the crisis. And so every year there's usually some announcement of we are doomed because of capitalism. Capitalism is dooming us to climate chaos. More severe weather, more crop failures. It's affecting every industry more or less. It will affect our lives. It's in just slow motion. So the story is kind of the same. The content And Sage, you were saying that you actually took a look at the content itself, so we can start with your take on it.
Yeah, so the paper is written by five Finnish groups. Let's see. Yeah, two of them are economic, and three of them are environmental research groups. I was also looking at, Finland's a democratic republic, so nothing super left-leaning, but as far as Scandinavia goes, left is more of the norm there. So, some people call it bias, maybe not. Take that as you will.
I mean, the fact that you even mentioned capitalism as a system is left-leaning. That's kind of my bar, do you have a critique of capitalism? Even if, you don't want to get rid of it, and you think it's reformable, at least I have a critique to say that's your center left, because you at least have a critique, but you don't want revolution in any sense.
Yeah, so my summary of the article is basically that they're saying, capitalism has to run on a fuel here, and that fuel is a whole lot of fossil fuels and the materials that we're making with them. But the problem is that we're eating through the capitalism fuel faster than we can replenish it. And they're saying that that's why we're seeing all kinds of economic problems that we are. So that's what's really interesting about this, is they're trying to connect the economic changes we see more to climate, which you don't see a whole lot of people trying to do.
The mass reset, global recession that is continuing.
Yeah.
And thus causing the kind of instability and security that lead to right-wing populism, which should also lead to left-wing populism, which is also appearing in patches around the globe as well. It's really kind of a patchwork of which countries are going far right and which are going slowly towards the left. Slowly, because of institutions that don't want things to go to the left at all. Like our own. Like the Democratic Party. Like both parties, obviously. And we're covering three different articles from three different sources. The story is climate change is dooming us. Very pessimistic, kind of. But I mean, it's just dire conditions. And how are we going to react to it? I think it's we need to adapt to new situations seems to be the new normal. Even high up Democratic politicians like the governor say, "Oh yeah, we need to adapt, and be prepared for storms and be ready." They're doing so in a militaristic fashion, like, "Oh, we need to beef up response and rescue." Not so much building soft infrastructure that actually reduces the harm. We're doing a little bit. All municipalities need to do that, but of course, there's no a lot of money available to build all of these, say, water control projects to control flooding, because that's flooding is really what's kind of hitting us harder than anything, as well as snow control. We're in for another, as the Farmer's Almanac is to be believed, we're in for a very rough winter. So I'm going to go through Grit Posts, working real news for the working class, so I'm assuming a progressive bent here. And so I'll just go through their general points here about the paper itself. Capitalism and global sustainability are incongruous with one another, meaning at odds, too, according to a recent paper for the UN's 2019 Global Sustainable Development Report. The team of researchers from various academic institutions throughout Finland who wrote it gave a sobering assessment of the planet's future. They do so about every year. If the current economic order continues unabated, namely that all rich Western countries have based their societies on abundance of cheap energy, which the scientists say is no longer reality. This is sometimes called peak oil. We kind of outlasted peak oil because of fracking. It basically bought us another decade or two. Scientists argue that worse than climate change is having a drastic attack on ecosystems and biodiversity, and that symptoms of unchecked capitalism like rising inequality, unemployment, and debt, that's personal debt as well, are also contributing to the destabilization, unrest of society. In order to guarantee humanity is able to have a good quality of life and future, paper's authors argued for new economic systems to be created. But you, Sage, mentioned that they were really vague about it. Is that correct? Okay. Go a little closer. Really eat that mic.
Yeah, so they make those sorts of generalizations that they say, let's see, rapid climate change, biodiversity loss, and other environmental hazards. Because those societies are witnessing rising inequality, rising unemployment, slow economic growth, rising debt levels, and governments without workable tools for managing their economies.
Can you translate that? Not on the fly. I always try, like, if I'm reading a jargon-filled article,
I need
to break it down into what's a simpler way of saying it. Obviously, less nuanced. That's basically the difference.
The reason for doing jargon in the first place is to be nuanced. The more we're draining the environment, the more it's draining our economy. Mm-hmm. Because our economy runs on the environment that it's in.
Good. Good job. Great show. Awesome job. So, and they, and so this paper, this source, Grit Post, gives a, and even Grit in the name, kind of wants to be working class. So their bent is towards, let's see, the only viable solution to attain the goal of zero emissions is, according to the paper, so maybe you can cross-reference this, is for state governments to, and forward-thinking leaders to test radical solutions at macro level, like a job guarantee, similar to what Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont has proposed in the past, as well as other neo-Keynesians. Keynesianism being the government deficit spends to fill in the holes of capital. Because as of now, for the last, since the recession started, capital has not been investing in a big way in any one sector, industry, or anything. There's just nothing that's actually profitable that gives them enough of a return to justify whatever investment. And they also don't need to invest because they're so rich already. The stacks are so big. Why do they need to take any risk? They don't need to grow personally. So why would they invest what resources they control for everyone else, for Main Street? So job guarantee. I have my misgivings about job guarantees because it falls into what others call a trap of workerism, that we all have to work. It's our purpose in life. We all have to work as much as possible, or at least, well, our ultimate goal in life is to have a job. It's what gives us purpose. And I kind of disagree about that. Yeah, obviously, there's work. There are things to do. But we don't have to classify these things as being jobs with slots and duties and all that crunchy hippie stuff that, mm-hmm. To abolish work, to make everything like a game, to gamify everything, as some techies kind of like to do.
Yeah, they say in the paper, they recommend that all people capable and willing to work would be able to get a permanent state-funded and locally administered job. The most suitable jobs for program would be those that almost anyone can do with limited training. The jobs could be modeled to serve the transition to sustainability and to build capabilities to adapt to climate change. For example, installing decentralized energy solutions and preparing for floods. In addition to triggering the transition, the job guarantee would ensure full employment. It would lessen insecurity and the need to compete for environmentally destructive jobs on the individual and collective level.
Oh, yeah, you're reading from the Grit Post article here, that paragraph.
Speak to the source.
Next, we'll move on to... So next, we'll move on to the Motherboard article. Motherboard, I assume, is more techie as well. And they literally have... Oh, no, sorry, it's a subset of Vice. And they literally have a category of capitalism, news and capitalism. And again, scientists warn the UN of capitalism's imminent demise. So it's not so much that capitalism is going to end us, it's that... Because of climate change and the effects of capitalism itself, it's basically a victim of its own success. The capitalism will just end because of climate change, not that it will end. We will survive capitalism. At least very much we should.
Yeah, their article is very writing on the walls. Because Vice is really big on the whole late capitalism
punk
theory.
They're kind of like mainstream punk, like punk that's been... it's under the surface more. I don't know. Because they started as a skateboard scene.
Yeah, they started some of the same people filming and making Jackass, actually. Yeah, it started Vice.
So, let's see. Reading from Motherboard. Capitalism as we know it is over, so suggests a new report commissioned by a group of scientists. So, yeah. Same intro there. That's why I made the intro generally. And they, again, they speak of the energy shift that's happening or needs to happen from fossil fuels to renewables. Not an all-of-the-above strategy, please. And that's kind of what turns out. You know, a friend of mine, actually, like, the moment he decided not to vote for Hillary in 2016 and Jill Stein instead was during one of the debates where Clinton said that she wasn't against fracking when asked about it. I'm like, well, I think that kind of clinches it. If you can't be against fracking at this point, you're still like, oh, we need to keep fracking. It needs to be all of the above. It's still the Democrats' platform. And or rather, every time progressives / Bernie-crats try to change the platform, not accept fossil fuel corporate donations, secretly they get rolled back, and now they're accepting them again. The... sink costs. Let's see. Do I need to read all of this? Not really. I'm more just kind of like, what are they saying is the answer?
Yeah, so they also
and they're actually more vague than the, you know, the job guarantee. They just kind of say the vague statism, Keynesianism, obviously. They do criticize techno utopianism or techno post capitalism, which is the whole post scarcity. We're going to have robots make everything, or maker bots and maker spaces will reduce the cost of making things so much that it's near zero. So we don't really need banks to finance anything, and thus we don't need a currency. Or we use cryptocurrencies instead of the dollar that's backed by our debt. So we don't need debt anymore. We don't have to be debt slaves paying our, you know, portion of our wages to whatever debt we have, because we all have it one way or another. Some of us just to the federal government's debt. And I lost my train of thought there.
Well, I can talk about the article a little more.
That's right. And so, like, it's kind of a pipe dream, because all the cryptocurrencies, especially Bitcoin, as the prime example that everyone might be aware of, uses a tremendous amount of power, energy. And though there are those graphics and memes about, like, if we have a square this big in the Sahara or Arizona that's just the solar panels, we can power the whole country. But those memes are actually quite ignorant of how renewable energy works. It has to be on spot, close by, because you lose energy via the transmission of it. That's why there's this whole, oh, we need a hydrogen economy. That way we convert to hydrogen or some stable fuel source and transport that for use in the same way that gasoline is the same thing. That's stored fuel that's in liquid or solid form versus making electricity in one place and transmitting it to another, and it leaks out of whatever conductive substance you're using.
Yeah,
there's just nothing you can do. You're going to lose, especially on the bigger transmission lines. And that's never addressed by techno-utopians. It's always just assumed that we just make enough energy, it doesn't matter how much we waste. But that's kind of the problem now. Because, believe it or not, renewable energy sources also take resources and extractive industries
somewhere.
I mean, it's assumed that, like, we make the solar panels once and we don't have to make them again, but they have a shelf life too, and obviously there are good people working on making them last longer, but they still have a shelf life of 30 years, and then we'll after, let's say, two cycles of this, we will run out of rare earth metals. And there are natural ways of getting electricity via the currents, tides, old standard water power, but it doesn't make enough for all of energy we're wasting, because that's what a lot of the use is. And, we'll get to that in the second hour.
But yeah, solar panels
the point that was kept to make.
Yeah, using, glass, metals, and you know, a fair bit of chemistry, and like all these chemicals got to be sourced from places. I mean, all of these things got to be sourced from places. But the paper actually gets into they recommend that we should turn away from using as much metals in construction.
Yeah, use more wood.
Metals are producing. Yeah, like it takes a lot of energy to refine them and transport them around and such. And actually, heck, this connects back to the solar punk episode a bit. They recommend that we switch more to wood and
natural materials. Yeah, natural materials. Sometimes called organic architecture.
Yeah.
Which we'll talk about in full when we do the next solar punk episode.
Sometimes I wonder though, like
I had to have quite the argument about wood skyscrapers.
What's your take on those?
And it was a local activist who I will not name, because it's not important. And she had a position that was understandable. These wood skyscrapers that are going to be built, I think there are 10 stories. And
they're building.
She was seeing it as, I mean, obviously any public housing that's built in America now is probably going to have some level of shoddiness because there'll be budget constraints, and there's always those dangers of public housing projects basically being underfunded after the fact as well, and some disaster happens. Grenfell Towers, for example. And what she led with, so it's a case of like you have real legitimate concerns, and then you lead with a concern that's actually quite debunkable, which is that I don't trust wooden skyscrapers. It's not going to be stable. Oh, only for the poor would they build housing out of wood. And as an architect, I had to explain that the technology has come a long way. This isn't just your standard wood 2x4s here. This is like laminated special polymer infused wood that has the same carrying capacity as a steel beam. And insulation from fire has come a long way, so that they are in fact also fireproof. I think I showed her pictures of one being constructed, so you can see just how massive the wood, quote unquote wood, main trusses and beams were made, like what they look like.
Yeah, the ones and, in China are getting massive.
Like, yeah, it's not that cheap, but the point is that it's made of a resource that is less energy intensive and reusable in the long run. But the construction industry has worked to make wood more viable as a mainstay building resource because things like aluminum. I mean, it used to be in the 50s that aluminum, when energy was really cheap, it would be like everything's made of aluminum. But aluminum takes a ton of energy to produce electricity. And the same goes for all those steels. You got to heat that stuff up. And they mentioned biochar, which is for storing carbon. That's always bandied about a lot. I'll read the last paragraph. Capitalism in that situation is not like ours. Economic activity is driven by meaning, maintaining equal possibilities for the good life while lowering emissions dramatically, rather than profit. And the meaning is political, collectively constructed. While I think this is the best conceivable case in terms of modern state and market institutions, it can't happen without considerable reframing of our economic and political thinking. Who's talking here? I think they're just quoting the study itself. And they mentioned transport. It's not that these aren't that long. I think I will. Let's keep going with this one though. So, yeah. So instead of like kind of prescribing certain policies, it's more that we just once we change our framework of how we think about the economy, instead of just a bunch of individuals trading with each other, but a system. But one pitfall that I saw at a recent local rally for justice of a police shooting victim, whether or not he was actually armed with a knife, probably was, but I don't think being shot in the back is warranted. I'll leave that aside. They'll talk about the system change this, system change that. But that leaves out, we're going to cover that later. Mm-hmm. But it basically leaves out the fact that we do have a ruling class. That when it comes to fighting climate change, it is not an individual's responsibility, especially the consumer end. It is industries, it is a supply side. We have a supply side system. We buy what is supplied, right? What's in the stores is what's made.
Yeah, people buy what's
we sold. Don't decide what's made, right? There's this interest in what's made, and that's supposed to inform firms or new entrepreneurs. I'm like, oh, I'm seeing interest in this area. People are asking for this, about this. I'll make a business for it. But those are small startups, not entire sectors of the economy, which, of course, that's what needs to change, because we need to change quickly. The mainstream position, I mean, just the whole, like, it'll fix itself in 50
yeah, it's
years.
A lot of me thinking. And,
yeah, you know, or in 50 years, it'll sort itself out.
Yeah, if I just think about me all the time, it'll end up benefiting everybody, but it's not working.
Yeah, my plane tickets, my carbon footprint. But the better framings is to read articles about how just living in a city is city energy use goes down in cities. Cities, or rather, not down, but cities use energy more efficiently than suburbs do.
They talk
regardless
about,
of the type, where
the original
from.
Paper on they break down their solutions to energy, transport, food, and housing, and in transport they get into in cities, walking and biking should be emphasized, and the remaining public or semi-public transport in between cities should be largely electrified.
Yeah, I like that. Although I'm still against just, like, you know, electric cars are still cars. You still need roads, parking garages.
Yeah, all that
and
energy and infrastructure
parking meters.
Somewhere. Huh? I wonder a lot, like, I was just saying, all that energy and infrastructure has to come from somewhere. That's more energy expenditure. I wonder a lot, though, about, like, I'm not sure if there's a name for this problem, but, how much energy, is there a kind of energy hump that we have to spend a certain amount of energy to spend less energy in the long run to get to a more sustainable place?
Well, that's kind of like the deficit spending of Keynesianism. We spend a lot now so that we have economic security in the long haul and we don't have economic crashes.
Yeah, I wonder a lot about, like,
we didn't have economic crashes for 30 years in America. We usually have one every 10 to 15 years because we had Keynesianist policies during the 50s and 60s and most of the 40s. I mean, we literally had a whole Bureau of the War Economy that was completely planned. And we had a whole size, chunk of the economy that was completely planned for the war effort. And that's what kind of got us out of the Depression, created explosive growth again. Not many of those industries were actually converted back to civilian use. Some were, but otherwise that's what creates our war economy. And so a lot of our economy is, our jobs and what have you, is predicated on keeping the empire running as is. So that will always get higher budgets, but not food stamps and other programs or just departments of the federal government. We were going to, how we're going to pick apart the Forbes article and how I could pick apart even the Keynesianism line, because how likely is it to be passed in our Congress? Even if all the Democrats, let's say we have this massive blue wave, they've adopted as a party, at least the leadership has, talking about Nancy Pelosi, PAYGO, meaning they're going to be fiscal conservatives. They care about deficits and they don't want a deficit spend. Any new program has to be offset by cuts to something else, and we know they're not going to cut the military, raising taxes, and we know they're pretty bad at just raising taxes on the rich. They usually have to do it in some regressive way. Like the law says, like, oh, the only way we can tax is by doing it regressively. Obamacare being the main example of that, or rather, they adopt Republican policies, which are regressive taxes, because that's the only way they like taxing, because they don't like taxing themselves. So Keynesianism is kind of, even though it's talked about in the Green Party too, it's not that likely a path, at least. I mean, you put in the work and something is bound to happen. just not to be nihilistic about, like, what can we, like, really, really do in the big way. But just if we can all think about it in better terms, system change, class struggle, we'll get into that with the second hour. We'll at least be on a better footing of, like, strategizing. Because right now, in most circles, the strategizing is terrible because they're still in a mindset of what can, like, the straw bans. That's the epitome of it. That it's actually a drop in the bucket as far as plastic use itself.
Yeah,
but because a kid did the math, a kid, all right, it's good on him. He did the math on a rough estimate of how many straws we use in America. And because it was a big number, that was impressive, it became a moral panic that we need to do something about straw use. As if it isn't all disposable plastic use that is like needs to be tackled wholesale. And again, that it is the distributors and the industries of creators of products that are using plastic. And then it's left up to a consumer choice of one company doesn't use plastic. But because of that, they need to charge $1.50 more. And thus, it doesn't fly off the shelves. And so is it really our choice when we have to crimp our spending? I would like to spend on all paper products. But I actually can't afford it, like many working class Americans. Our wages are stagnant. If they weren't, maybe we could be more responsible consumers. But otherwise, marketplace doesn't want us to be. Otherwise, we are disincentivized, as it's called.
Yep, disincentivizes the
so ragging on our incentive processes. Here's Forbes, Voice of Wall Street. Sometimes, I mean, it's literally named for a billionaire. Unless it changes, capitalism will starve humanity by 2050. So they actually take a little harsher line there.
I'm surprised.
So
even Forbes says, okay, maybe the UN study has it right here.
Yeah, maybe capitalism is bad. But here's where it becomes the who's reporting on what. So the other two sites, more left-leaning, define capitalism more broadly, and Keynesianism, you know, state deficit spending, as being an antidote, which I disagree with. It's not socialism, that's for sure. Please internalize that. But capitalism in their head, and we'll get into what they actually mean by capitalism. So first, they actually take some bullet points to get into how bad this crisis is, in case you didn't know yet. Species are going extinct at a rate 1,000 times faster than that of the natural rate over the previous 65 million years. So we had a mass extinction event.
Yep, we're right in it.
When the Earth was hit by a giant asteroid, basically we're back to that because of our contribution by changing
because of how fast
the makeup of the atmosphere. Because it doesn't change. The makeup of the atmosphere usually takes tens of thousands of years, and we've done it in a century. Since 2000, 6 million hectares of primary forest have been lost each year. That is a little less than the entire state of West Virginia. And that's each year. Okay? And that's lost through wildfire, but also man-made fires clearing the rainforest for cattle production. Because hamburgers are so important that we need to destroy the goddamn rainforest. Save the rainforest, eat less beef, okay? Even in the U.S., but again, personal choice, right? Really, it's an entire beef industry. At least they're working off of the demand that everyone wants to eat more hamburgers. Even in the U.S., 15% of the population lives below the poverty line. And that's below. Many more are just slightly above it and could fall under it with one bad accident. For children under the age of 18, that number increases to 20%. The world population is expected to reach 10 billion by 2050. Statement of the crisis. Though I don't consider population growth to be... Only if everyone is using the same amount of energy is that a problem. But obviously, all of those people are not using the same amount of energy as us. How do we expect to feed that many people while we exhaust resources that remain? Just to pick apart, Forbes is going to use the population control. This is, I mean, they're kind of using the narrative here. It's always eugenics, by the way. It's always a war against the poor when it comes to talking about population control. It's never richer people who are going to. They already have less children, apparently. But they're using the most energy, right? So hell with them. Public corporations are responding to consumer demand and pressure from Wall Street. Professor Christopher Wright and Daniel Neyberg published Climate Change, Capitalism, and Corporations last fall, arguing that businesses are locked in a cycle of exploiting the world's resources in ever more creative ways. Quote, our book shows how large corporations are able to continue engaging in increasingly exploitative behavior by obscuring the link between endless economic growth and worsening environmental destruction. Yale sociologist Justin Farrell studied 20 years of corporate funding and found that, quote, corporations have used their wealth to amplify contrarian views of climate change and create an impression of greater scientific uncertainty than actually exists. So just a statement that fossil fuel companies propagating climate change denial. Corporate capitalism is committed to the relentless pursuit of growth, even if it ravages the planet and threatens human health. As if when it wasn't corporate, it wasn't doing the same thing. Trust me, as an amateur historian, even in the Renaissance era, when they weren't giant mega corporations, there was still massive environmental destruction. There's a reason. Big sidetrack topic. Why is the Netherlands so prone to flooding? Why is most of the country below sea level? Well, a lot of the Netherlands used to be made of peat bogs. So this was, you know, bogs that the land was up. And over the course of the centuries, from the Renaissance forward, when they were kind of pre-industrial, peat moss is very carbon rich. It's a great fuel, better than wood at the time. So anything better than wood is obviously something you'd want to burn. And that's what fueled their textile industries and made them so rich in the first place. And so they basically had like the pre-coal. And that's what gave them an edge and why the Netherlands had all these colonies when they're just a tiny little patch of land. But they mined so much of the peat moss out, it's why most of the country is basically underwater. It has to be because they basically took all the land itself, and burned it. It's kind of renewable, but it takes 30 years, and they just used so much of it. They didn't replenish it. Kind of like Easter Island, where they used all their trees, and thus then nothing else could grow there because they destroy their ecosystem. To build all the Mauis. But, Forbes writes, a new generation of companies are showing the way forward. They're infusing capitalism with fresh ideas, specifically in regards to employee ownership and agile management. So, right off the bat, their headline is Capitalism Will Starve Humanity. And they're just saying, well, within capitalism's new young generation of entrepreneurs are going to save the food. Closer. So they talk about shared ownership, which is a socialist thing. That is what socialism is. But they're talking within individual firms. For example, fund managers of global financial institutions own the majority, 70%, of the public stock exchange. 70%. Oh, yeah, it's your uncle that has stocks. That's you're invested in Wall Street. These absent owners have no stake in the communities in which the companies operate. Furthermore, management-controlled equity is concentrated in the hands of a select few, CEO and other senior executives. So completely hierarchical. It's what anarchism is about, fighting. On the other hand, startups have been willing to distribute equity to employees. So notice they say equity instead of ownership. That they play with these words that do in fact mean different things, but they're not talking about the same thing in each paragraph. Sometimes such equity distribution is done to make up for less than competitive salaries, but more often it's offered as a financial incentive to motivate employees toward building a successful company. No bills, no chills. According to The Economist, today's startups have been keen to incentivize via shared ownership. Quoting them, the central difference lies in ownership. That is true. Whereas nobody is sure who owns public companies, startups go to great length, thus no one has actual responsibility. Where's the buck stop? Early in the company's life, the founders and first recruits own a majority stake, and they incentivize people with ownership stakes or performance-related rewards. That has always been true for startups, but today the rights and responsibilities are meticulously defined in contracts. This aligns interests and creates a culture of hard work and camaraderie. Because they are private rather than public, they measure how they are doing using performance indicators rather than the elaborate accounting standards of usually referring to profit maximization. What is the real bottom line? But instead using a different form of success. This also brings up... No, I'll just move on. This trend harkens back to cooperatives. These aren't cooperatives, though. But, oh yeah, in anarchist theory about, like, how do we work together in communes and collectives, we actually do it using contracts as well. They're just more actual consensual contracts that are not so much enforced by police and courts, but simply by the actual social bonds of, you agreed to do this many chores in the apartment. And if you don't live up to that, then you don't get the benefits of living in said commune / collective. Let's see. REI is a consumer cooperative that drew attention this past year when it opted out of Black Friday sales, encouraging its employees and customers to spend the day outside instead of shopping. And they also mentioned Mondragon. So Forbes and Mondragon. And again, Mondragon is, by Democratic Socialists, is seen as like the ultimate co-op. It's still a corporation. But obviously it's kind of, at least as far as reforming capitalism is concerned, it is where we want to be. So they're in Northern Spain. Mondragon is an off-site example of a successful modern worker cooperative. Mondragon's broad-based employee ownership is not the same as an employee stock ownership plan. With ownership comes a say, control over the business. Their workers elect management, and management is thus then responsible to the employees. This does not exist. Does this exist in your workplace? I assume not. And the only thing from Hillary Clinton's, her platform during the 2016 campaign, where she was going left on the economy, her main plank that stood out was encouraging the employee stock ownership. It's like, oh yeah, we'll make workers can be part owners by owning stock in the company. But maybe you're electing the board, but you're not a majority stakeholder. It's the Wall Street management firms that own all the stock. It's not even, completely unhelpful. It's totally feel good. Just like all of their politics, liberals and whatever. We're going to feel good about it. Just like McCain's funeral. Not going into that. Good. Listen to the Chapo Trap House's episodes on McCain and his funeral. They covered that extensively. I don't need to talk about it. So joint ownership, and then the subtitle, joint ownership will lead to collaborative management. The hierarchical organization among corporations will give way to networks of communities that make collaboration paramount. Many options are more fluid, agile, management. So, and they talk about holacracy, which is something some tech guys are into. Companies like Zapdos and Medium are varying stages of implementing a more horizontal management system. Valve Software, managers of Steam, but again, so here's the thing, and this goes to the end. And these are small steps toward a system that values the employee more than what the employee can produce. By giving employees a greater say in decision-making, corporations will make choices. So, yeah, instead of just more money for basically being a wage slave or some cog in a corporate machine, having more control is a good substitute for that. But again, a general sum up here is these are companies still within a for-profit, completely bank, the profits of banks driven system. And, you know, Steam is not immune to making dumb corporate decisions that piss their customers off. I mean, but they are, I mean, pretty chill as far as a tech company goes, as far as actually everyone who works there, and it's mostly men, do in fact, like, govern by consensus, right? So you can bring consensus and anarchist principles into corporations, so kind of a what's called platformism. So it doesn't matter what the platform is, whether it be a corporation or a little study group, you can implement anarchist principles. But it's a very inside out, and it's still like these are still capitalist firms at the end of the day. And what incentive does Val have to conserve energy besides their own ethics? As much as they can. Eventually, they're harmed / threatened by not, and they'll be outcompeted as far as the market's concerned by the more exploitative company.
Survive. We'll be given for lives as we bow silently.